I'm David Marcus, host of Drinks with the Deal. And today our guest is Elisa Levin, a founding partner of Green Levin Snyder, a legal recruiter in Manhattan. Elisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
I'm so thrilled to be here, David. And I think I'm one of your first non-practicing lawyers here.
So we're going to talk about your career arc on today's podcast. You started out practicing law and then your transition into legal recruiting, what you enjoy about it, what makes for a good lateral move, both for a lawyer and a law firm or a corporate that brings that lawyer into an in-house position. And then what you're seeing in the lateral market now. So with that, tell us a little bit about yourself and how you came to the practice of law.
Sure. I grew up in Chicago. I was the daughter of a single mom who was a University of Chicago feminist. I wanted to change the world. And I knew nothing about corporate law or anything like it. I just remember I probably wanted to do something that was at that point considered a man's profession. And also I wanted security. I remember waking up in the morning because my mother would have gone to work already and seeing her notes about her budget and whether she was going to make the end of the month. And I didn't want to end up with that kind of insecurity. So I was very fortunate. I got a scholarship to come to New York for college, but put myself through school. I've worked all the way through. I then went to St. John's Law School, which is not one of the fancy schmancy schools, but I got a great legal education there and I was able to be editor in chief. And I thought I'd practice law forever.
And you started out at Cleary.
Yes. My very first job was clerking at the New York State Court of Appeals for Chief Judge Charles Breitel. And he told me when I was going to interview that even though I had summered actually at Fried Frank, that all his good clerks went to Cleary. He also told me that one of my predecessors got an offer on the spot, which I did not. But he pointed me to Cleary. I went there. I got the offer. And much of my life has been shaped by that because there is where I married my husband. And at that point, I needed to leave. It was a different era. At that time, it was highly discouraged for married couples to practice at the same firm, particularly when one was a very visible, important partner, and the other was a lowly associate. I was also insecure enough so that if I did make partner, I would think it because of my husband, or if I didn't make partner, then I would hate my husband's partners. So I thought it was best I move.
And so you then went to White and Case, and you were a bankruptcy lawyer, correct?
I was. It was the beginning of the new bankruptcy code. I really loved the practice, and I also loved it at White and Case and the people I worked with. But one of the problems, we had just bought a brownstone in Park Slope that was over 100 years old. I also inherited two stepchildren and knew I was going to have my own children. And it was a little bit hard to juggle everything. White and Case really tried to accommodate me. They made me counsel. But at that point, being a counsel was like flying business class in a plane that only had coach and first class. And it just got complicated. And I couldn't say to clients, listen, you know, I'm on the other side of the letterhead at reduced compensation. Call me tomorrow. I'm going home to take care of my kids. So I decided at some point, even though they had made me counsel and really tried to accommodate me, I couldn't handle the various pressures. And they thought I was lying to them because I had been editor-in-chief. I was one of those goody-two-shoes who always overachieved. And I said, no, I'm going to stay home. And so I stayed home for 6 years.
And so talk about transitioning from staying home with your children when they were young back into the work world and your decision to go into legal recruiting and what legal recruiting was like. I'm assuming this is the 90s.
Yes, it was the mid 90s, and I was home and was very busy when I was at home. And really, I was home for about 6 years. And the person who had placed me from Cleary to White & Case was always keeping in touch with me. And she said, why don't you come and do recruiting? And at the time, I realized I was not home with my kids, like many of my friends who stayed home. I was out in the community. I was raising money. I was involved with nonprofits. I said, I might as well go back to work. But I knew I did not want the demands of a Wall Street practice. And at that time, you have to remember, it was before cell phones. It was before the internet. I now sound like I'm 150 years old, but it was a very different practice then. So I decided that that's something that I could do. I was fairly good with people, and I thought I could dabble in it. The funny thing is, I told the people at Cleary that I was doing what I was about to do. And you'd think I was telling them I was selling snake oil, because they could not understand how people would move from one firm to another. It was just not done, at least then, for sure, at the partner level. So I also had realized that one of the things that I had done earlier was always been somebody who was good at connecting the dots. I remember very early on when I was an associate and I was just quietly dating the partner, which was verboten at that time. He was really upset because one of his clients, McMillan, needed a general counsel and nobody at the firm wanted the job. But it's great to place an alum at a firm and you tie in the client. And I had this idea of a litigator who I knew, who actually was one of the predecessors who had clerked for my judge. I said, he'd be a great general counsel, even though not who you would think of, wasn't a corporate lawyer. And then he went on, took the job, and was there for over 20 years. So never got paid for that one, but it pointed me in that direction.
And so in the 90s, was the bulk of your work helping associates move from one firm to another firm or move in-house and then placing people, lawyers, in in-house roles of various seniority levels? Because there was just much less movement of partners between firms 25, 30 years ago.
There definitely was much less, but I actually did start with partners, which in some ways was a deficit for me, because you really know the market best if you start with associates and then you grow up with them and they become partners. But the person I worked for thought I would be better in the partner market. And although there wasn't the musical chairs that you see now, and certainly not in the Am Law, what today would be the Am Law 20, there were partners who moved at other firms. And so that's where I started.
When you are talking to a lawyer who's considering a move or to a firm that is doing a search, what are you trying to learn?
When it comes to the lawyer, the most important thing is to listen to them, to understand what's bothering them about their current practice, what change would be helpful. And they don't always articulate that or aren't even aware of it themselves. So you have to draw it out of them. On the firm side, it's a little bit different. Firms are better now at doing strategy planning and running the firm like a business. But you also have to understand the culture of the firm and what's important and who is really making the decision there. Now there's a whole infrastructure of non-legal professionals who work with partner recruiting. But in the early days, it was chiefly the partners who articulated their needs.
talk about the career counseling aspect of your job.
It could be endless. Now, I don't have a degree in psychology or in career counseling, but lots of times people will go through the exercise and realize it's not the firm, it's something else, or they could do better at their own firm if they made some changes. On the other hand, sometimes a move is 100% in order. You really have to spend some time with the candidate and have a good sense of what the firms are like to appreciate whether the complaints are real or if they're being seen through the eyes of somebody who's a little bit distorted. So you have to know the market really well.
How consistent are firm cultures over time? Or do law firm cultures change more than even the partners at these places might realize?
I think we are in an era right now where there's tremendous change because the culture in the end is established by people. And law firms are about talent and human capital. And if you look at some of the firms that have recruited such a large percentage of laterals, that the population is very different. And these are often people today who are very important at the firms. I mean, look at the numbers of people who recently have gone to Paul Hastings. I don't have the exact number, but it's got to look different than it did 2 years ago or even a year ago, or Paul Weiss numbers of laterals. So when you have a firm that has substantial laterals, that culture is changing.
What do firms that do lateral hiring well do? And what is it reasonable for a firm to expect and not expect out of a lateral hiring program?
First of all, they have to consider it important, because if they don't consider it important, they will not spend the resources or the time to invest. And it takes a lot of time. You have to be realistic about who's going to fit in. And I'll divide it between the pre-hiring, when the firm is interviewing a lot of, well, first is articulating their needs to the recruiter, then interviewing a lot of candidates. And then once they make those offers, there's the whole period of wooing somebody. And firms can be very bad at that and don't understand that the partner is who many times has spent their whole career at one place. And because they work so hard and spend so many hours at the office, their whole social network is the firm. And now they don't have that available to them. And it's a very precarious moment. And if the new firm is not out there making that candidate partner feel comfortable, they could lose them. And then there's the integration period. And you know, you can't just throw somebody in a room, or even now people think it's very important to get groups because the success could be faster, and that there's a lot of truth to that. But groups also need to integrate into the fabric of the firm. And so I think spending time with both the candidate and with integrating the candidate into the firm is critical. In the current era, firms have built up, as I mentioned before, infrastructure around recruiting. They always had teams of people working with associate hiring, on-campus recruiting, and lateral recruiting and associate programs. But now, because lateral hiring is such an important part of many firms' growth, there are now professionals who are devoted solely to that. And we value those professionals because they can move things along, make it very easy. Sometimes it's impossible to get a partner's attention. But the flip side of it, and what I see at firms that do this well, is at the right time, it is important to have access to the partners. And we're not trying to take away or undermine anybody's role on the professional staff, but the candidate, the partner is going to be working with other partners, and they're just things that that person alone, that partner alone can address. So that's another thing I think that firms who do it well allow that kind of an access.
Talk about the differences among placing an associate at another firm or in-house, helping a partner move laterally between firms, and then placing a lawyer at a position in a company.
They're all three different exercises, clearly. When it comes to associates, moves are not as wrenching as they are with partners. Not that one wants to place somebody incorrectly or at the wrong place, but there's a lot more tolerance for error. And firms are bigger and they can move an associate around, and they're much more used to associates coming in and out. But if we have a whole team who moves associates, they're probably better suited to talking about some of the pitfalls. But we try to make sure that the associate understands what they're getting into, understands the practice area, understands what the options are there. And it's also very different if you're moving as a third year or you're moving as a seventh year. The opportunities shrink the more senior you get, and the stakes are higher the more senior you get. When it comes to a partner, as I said before, it is wrenching. You've spent a lot of time at one place. You've invested many times. You came up the ranks there. This is what you know about the practice of law. And firms are different. Their expectations are different. Their culture is different. Practices are different. Bankruptcy at one firm is different from restructuring at another. And there's more income. Clients are coming out. Occasionally a client comes with an associate, but most associate moves don't take that into consideration. But a partner has to bring their clients. There are conflicts of interest that have to be resolved. It's a much more complicated exercise.
What issues do you talk through with lawyers, you know, regardless of seniority, who think they want to move in-house? Who succeeds in-house and who finds an in-house role more challenging? In a way, the lawyers themselves, if they've spent their whole careers at firms, may not quite realize.
Exactly. And many times our in-house clients only want somebody who has already been in-house. And occasionally we will say, we get that, but given the kind of experience you want and the training you want, we think you could get somebody from a law firm. And they say, yeah, but it's not the same skill set. We can help you identify the differences. You can't be a lawyer's lawyer many times if you're going in-house. You have to know how to get to yes, if you can, and how to be user-friendly as well. You can't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. You have to move forward. You have to understand the business. You have to understand the pressures. You could be the smartest lawyer in the room, but if the business people aren't comfortable coming to you, it's just not going to work. And you have to understand their pressures. And usually it's somebody who wants to be closer to the business side, get in on the issues earlier. Usually the people that we place have staying power. Occasionally you'll see somebody going back to a firm. Sometimes it may be a failure, but often it's because they have learned a skill set that you can only learn in-house, and now law firms want to take advantage of that. So say when privacy started being huge, a lot of the privacy lawyers were people who were already in-house. and the law firms all wanted to grab them. Or derivatives. A lot of the derivatives lawyers were in the banks and really knew the broker-dealer regulations and many times in highly regulated areas. So now we're seeing what I think some people have called it the reverse commute, when in-house lawyers are going back to law firms.
I feel like I see those moves more now than I would have even 3 to 5 years ago. And I would think they have to be quite challenging.
They are. Many times somebody will go in as a counsel, because oftentimes the first thing you hear from somebody who often wants to go in-house, I'm tired of the hustle. Some people are born to generating business and absolutely love it, and they have the Midas touch. And it can be taught, but for other people, it's not as natural, and it's much harder. And when they went to law school, they never thought that they'd have to develop business. Now, people are understanding that earlier and earlier in their careers. I went up to teach at Yale a negotiations class a couple of weeks ago, and the students, most of them were second-year law students, they get it now. They ask about developing business, but that wasn't always the case.
What are the most enjoyable and challenging parts of your job?
Well, the challenging parts are, for the most part, we are very relationship-driven, but we do get paid on a transaction. And so you could work on something for a very, very long time, spend a lot of effort, and it can go nowhere. Or another recruiter can come in, and a candidate you thought was so loyal to you and with whom you developed, you thought, a really, really honest and open relationship, and you lose them. But that's part of the business. People have to do what's most beneficial for their own careers. It's not about me. And so those are the hard parts. The best part, I meet some fantastic people. While lawyers can be quirky, let's remember I went to Cleary Gottlieb, which was always known to be really interesting but quirky people. I meet fascinating people. Many of them become my friends, and I'm always learning something new, but I don't have to stay up all night and produce documents. And the enjoyment I get from seeing how people that we've placed grow, become lifelong friends or lifelong clients, and that feels good.
Where do you see the growth in your business coming in the next 2 to 3 years?
I think the partner market is frighteningly frothy, a little too much. So a tremendous amount in partner market. The associate market is picking up a lot now. It's not what it was 2 years ago, where you could place anybody who moved. And law firms were throwing bonuses at us to get us to focus on their searches. Normally, a fee is 25% or something of first-year comp for associate. And there was, and we'll pay you 35%. I mean, it's unbelievable. That game is over. But the partner market is very busy. And litigation is coming back very strong. Privacy, I mentioned before, restructuring. If everybody's always talking about how the markets are such and restructuring will come back, it's solid. I don't know if it's going to be robust. And corporate, as you know much better than I, the deal market is returning. And then there's always a new flavor of the month. Now it's private credit. You know, 20 years ago, private credit was like the stepchild of finance. Now it's changed, but there's always something new.
To what extent does lateral hiring or has lateral hiring among law firms created its own momentum in the sense that if partner A moves, then the firm that partner A left may need to get someone with that expertise? Or do you see firms recognizing that lateral hiring may be more challenging than many of them had realized?
I think they're realizing that it is more challenging. You can't just lift up a group, put it in, and plug and play. But I think the momentum that's been created now can't stop. If you've got groups of people or even a significant percentage of partners moving, all firms want to service their clients. And unless there's a specific area, like for a while, firms were getting out of the high net worth practice, trusts and estates, or thinking certain things like labor and employment were not as profitable. So a lot of firms unloaded those practices and those people went to specialist firms. For the most part, firms want to be one-stop shops and be global. And so the people who are leaving need to be replaced. And it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's musical chairs that I don't see the music stopping.
And then finally, you mentioned when you were home with your kids when they were small, that there was a certain seamlessness between your personal life and your interaction in the community. Talk about that now and how that plays into your professional life.
Yeah. As I mentioned before, a lot of my friends are people I met through work. And also, there's no school for recruiting that I know of, at any rate. And so that's one of these things you learn on the job. But a lot of the skills that I learned through successful fundraising when I was involved in and still am in many community organizations. You have to understand the product that you're pitching. You have to understand what motivates the candidate or the donor. You are relationship driven. It's called development because it takes time. And so all of those qualities turn out to be quite helpful to recruiting. You need to listen to the candidate. You need to understand what the firm or the in-house position has to offer. You have to be enormously patient, and you have to, at some point, know that they've got to pull the trigger or close the deal. I used to have a particular guidepost for myself, because lawyers, as you know, are very risk averse, or many are risk averse. And for a while, I would not work with a male partner who had been at the same firm and married to the same spouse for their entire life, because I knew they would never leave. It would be a waste of time. Now, of course, there are exceptions, but it served me well over decades. So taking that to now, many of my clients, as I said, come from my nonprofit work. I've been very active in the Jewish community at UJA Federation of New York. And I can name about five partners that I've met through there, through the lawyers division. And also when I'm calling, cold calling, which is not the most fun thing to do, if people know me from a different context, it really helps.
Well, and just having the confidence to cold call. If you're raising money for an institution and you're cold calling, you accept that there's going to be a level of rejection. It's hard to cold call.
You definitely develop a thick skin. It's interesting, the younger recruiters now in our office don't like calling. They're texting. And they're sending emails, and we are saying, get on the phone. That's the way you develop a relationship, particularly now that so much is done by Zoom.
Alisa, thank you so much for joining us today.
It was a lot of fun. Thanks for having me.
For Drinks with a Deal, I'm David Marcus.